Blog Talk Radio.
The year, 1888. The place, London's East End. Dead and mutilated bodies are popping up all over, from Stamford to Whitechapel. Jack the Ripper is leaving his mark, and the city's on edge. Yvonne Mason is back with a tale of murder and millinery. The Rhodes Hat Factory is booming while the body count rises. Why now? How are these hats connected? Has the Hatter gone mad? Mad Hatter, Yvonne Mason. Available now on Amazon.com.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I think it's Saturday night. I'm pretty sure it's Saturday night. This morning I woke up thinking it was Friday for some reason. I guess because I've had 6 Mondays in this week. But this is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason, and that was my ad man, Chris Dunham, doing a shameless piece of promotion for the Mad Hatter for me. If you haven't gotten it, you need to, because if you love historical fiction, you love murder mysteries, you love strange things, you'll love the Mad Hatter. And for those of y'all who don't know what happened in 1888 in Whitechapel, go back and read your history books. This morning when I ran the numbers, I tell you what, I just get so excited about running the numbers for this show because every day they climb. Ladies and gentlemen, we are exactly 400 away from this show being 6,000. Just this show. Doesn't include all of the podcast where we are. Last night I said we were at 16,000, but we're a little bit shy of that. We're pretty close to 15,000. We're 1,200 away from 15,000. My goal was for 15,000 by the end of the year. It looks like we're going to get there before the first year anniversary, which is not until July the 27th. And I'm going to do something special for that show. But I have to give a shout out to Australia and Canada because they are our biggest listeners. Australia on this show just has the USA beat hands down. I mean, hands down. It's 77%. So thank you guys down under for being such good supporters of this show. Our show ranges from authors to musicians to artists to platforms to businesses. You name it, we'll talk about it. And with that being said, oh, and by the way, we are listened to in over 51 countries now, and that excites me an awful lot because it's because of my guests that this show is successful. And they're getting heard. Their work is getting out there. Their trademark is getting out there. And they are getting exposure that they would not normally get, especially indie authors and musicians. It's so hard for us in this industry to get the exposure we need because most of us are not in box stores because box stores won't carry our books for whatever reason. And box stores are going away anyway. So we have to find creative ways in order to get ourselves out there. And this show is one of the ways that our authors get out there. And I'm very honored and pleased that they agreed to come on my show for an hour. So with that being said, I want to welcome author Rival Gates. He was born in Port Huron, Michigan, and then he moved to a suburb of Toronto, Ontario, Canada, at age 5. His father was a technical writer and a magazine editor, and his mother was a high school teacher. He always was interested in creative writing, and he participated in many contests in grammar school, which led him to start writing his own short stories. At age 13, he started working on one, which kept developing and progressing until he had a handwritten manuscript for Quest for the Red Sapphire at age 15, ladies and gentlemen, 15 years old. Keep that in the back of your mind. The project was shelved for many years through high school and then returning to the USA to attend Michigan State University. He graduated with a degree in communication and found that he had a gift and enthusiasm for public speaking. That led him to a career in furniture store management and sales. With his first computer, he dusted off his old story and began to revise it. Not a day passed since He first created the story that he did not consider some aspect of its outline. An entire series was planned and put in order to be written. Backstories were formed and the series was ready to produce. After many years of refinement of the stories, now remember, he put the story together at 15. After many years of refinement of the stories, his mother came to him with a terminal illness and made him promise to publish the book. So you know what Rival did? He published the book. Welcome, Rival. I am so glad you were here. I was getting a little worried there, and then when you said, well, the grandchildren sort of detoured you, I understand. I have several of my own, and I avoid them like the plague.
Yes, they suddenly wanted my attention, and I'm like, no, no, Grandpa's got to go now.
I got to go do something. So
it's like, you're not putting on your shoes, though. I'm like, I know, but Grandpa's got to do something.
Yeah, all of mine are near about grown or grown, so I am grateful for that. I don't have any wee ones. I have several great-grandchildren, and one of them is three, I think. I don't know. I can't keep up. There's so many of them. Between my husband and myself, we have a blended family, and they just run amok. I think they multiply, and then like little amoebas, and then they show up, and there's more of them, and I don't know. I can't keep up with them anymore. I quit trying. So let's talk about you.
Okay.
Let's go back in time and bring me up to speed for the quest for the Red Sapphire, because you started this work years and years and years ago when you were in school, grammar school, high school.
Right. When I was 13 I started.
13. Tell me about it. What made you come on this journey?
Well, my father's health declined, and he had a heart attack, and he lost his job, and things were kind of rough for the family, and I took all that depression, and instead of just sitting there and stewing about it, I decided that I would put that into a story and just do a story that wasn't depressed, but just a story that I'd been working on in my mind. And originally it was supposed to be just a little story, and then it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then I said, well, heck, I might as well do a whole book about this. And that's what I did. And, you know, back then it was the typewriter with the, you know, if you made a mistake, you had to change cartridges and go back and have the little white cartridge to go through. And if you made a mistake, you had to go through the dictionary and see if you did it right. So I had handwritten it, and I finished that when I was 15. And my mother was my greatest fan on it, because I, of course, would talk to her about it, and it was planned as a 9-book series. And I've actually, right now, I'm writing book 5 of it.
Wow.
And the first 4 have been published, and I'm really, really happy with them. But Quest was one that I had put so much time into, it ended up being almost 1,000 pages long. And my agent came to me and said, you know, you might want to think about splitting that in half, because that's just a little long for people. So that's what
I
did.
Sort of like a Stephen King book.
Yeah, that was just a little long for your average reader. And so I did. I split it in half. And so Quest has a cliffhanger in it.
Hmm. Well, let me ask you this. When you went to, came back, you went to Canada, and I love Canada. In fact, just had a band, well, actually two bands from Ontario on my show this week. They're some of our biggest listeners as well, and the people in Canada, they're magnificent. I just adore them. But you went to Canada at 5, and then you came back and went to Michigan and got your degree in communication. What made you go into the furniture store management and sales? I find that interesting.
Well, quite honestly, it was something that I started out there because I fell in love in college with my wife, and we wanted to get married right after college, and I needed a job that had benefits, and there was not a lot out there when I graduated, and it was something that had benefits because we wanted to start a family. And so I started as a furniture manager for Montgomery Ward, which was kind of like a JCPenney or the Bay, something like that.
My mother worked for Montgomery Ward years ago. So they were around a long time.
Yep. Yeah, I did a good job of running them out of business because I stayed with them to the end.
So, in while you were working and raising a family, you completely put aside your writing. Was that a correct assumption?
Yes, until about 1996. When I bought my first computer. And then that's when I was able to get Microsoft Word, and I started typing in Quest for the Red Sapphire. And I must have rewritten it two or three times. And what I would do is I would send chapters home to my mother to proofread. She was my ghostwriter, I guess, is the best way of putting it. And what she did, and I didn't know about this, was she was lending out the chapters to her friends. And she told me one Christmas, "Do you have the next chapter? Because my friends want to know what happens next." And I said, "What? You've been giving out the chapters to your friends?" She said, yes. I wanted to know what, they all want to know what happens next, and they all want a copy. So can you print out about 6 copies? And I'm like, "Mom." So that's how it got proofread.
Oh, so, and you couldn't have found better proofreaders.
No.
Because they were probably old school, and because your mom was a school teacher, she could edit it for grammar and for dangling participles and run-on sentences and commas where they didn't need to be or commas where they needed to be. And then the friends, they probably were old school, I don't want to say English speaking, but they used proper grammar is what I'm trying to say. And they understood proper grammar because they were brought up in that era. So you had 7 proofreaders.
It was crazy, and you know, I was still in that phase where I was shy about my writing because I hadn't put it out there before. But and of course, you know, to hear your mother say, oh, it's great, put it out there. Well, it's your mom.
Mm-hmm.
You feel like she has to say that. But when she came to me years later with the cancer, things changed. And, I mean, how can you deny somebody who makes you promise to get it published?
You can't. You have to
no.
do it, because she had been on that journey with you for so long.
Yes.
And she was so proud of what you had done that she was pimping it out to her girlfriends. Now, for all you know, Rival, she could have been making a little bit of money on the side. Because, you know,
no,
for this
attempt,
it'll cost you a quarter or a dollar or something. You don't ever know with mamas. That is too funny. So you went ahead and published the first one.
Yes.
Well, actually, you broke it up after your agent said you might want to break it up. Now, in a little bit, I'm going to talk about the book and what it's about, because I want to talk about you for a little bit first. And you have a blog, ladies and gentlemen. He has a beautiful, beautiful blog. And one of the things that caught my eye, and I read that story about your mother pimping it out to her friends, there, he wrote this blog about going it alone. And if you don't mind, I would like to read this, because there are a lot of authors out there who feel like you felt at one time.
Sure.
So I'm going to take just a minute and read this, ladies and gentlemen, then I want to talk about it, Rival, because it touched me. Because I've been in this business a long, long time. And when I was younger and not very sure of myself, I felt like this. It's called Going It Alone. And this is what he says. Let me tell you a story. A young man, okay, a teenager, came up with this idea for a short story. As he worked out the details, the story became longer and longer until it turned into a novella. But the story was not finished. Every idea, like a snowball rolling down a mountainside, just grew and added more to the storyline. At last, the young man looked down and saw he had a novel he could write with the potential of others to follow. In the weeks that followed, he carefully crafted the first chapter and presented it to his father, an editor by trade, for review. The next morning over breakfast, the young man asked his father what he thought of the first draft of the chapter. The father set down his coffee, slammed his fist on the table, and proceeded to tear the papers in half and then into quarters. When he was done, he dropped the papers on the ground and left for work. Heartbroken, the boy fell to the ground and picked up the pieces and held them to his chest. Being late for school, he hid the papers in his room and ran out the door. As he briskly walked to school, he realized, my ideas are good, but my writing isn't good enough yet. I must fix this. He paid more attention in English class as they studied the great writers of the past, but where he really excelled was in creative writing. After working through some grammatical problems, his stories were always top of the class. In fact, one was so good it was entered in and won an Ontario it's a contest. His success mounted in high school as he was asked to write numerous school plays. Never in all that time did he tell anyone outside his family about his books. He had already finished the first one and was working on the second. Then college came, and there was little time for working on books. So he thought about a different part of the series every night before bed. He told one friend about them and let her read a few chapters. She was astounded and said it should be published. He was unprepared for ridicule again and refused to try. After graduation, he married his college sweetheart, who had no interest in the books as long as it wasn't an inconvenience. They had three children together and finally bought a computer. He began transferring his books onto it and printing copies for his one supporter to keep safe. Through all the years, his mother loved to hear the stories over and over. She said he had a gift. Little did he know when he gave her the chapters that she was loaning them out to her friends. He built up quite a following, as it turns out, as the ladies bickered over who received a chapter next. It was years later he found that out. Many years came and went, and his parents came to visit from far away. She asked to go for a drive. That was always a fun thing for the two of them to do. As they drove, she informed him that she had terminal cancer and she would not be visiting again or be around much longer. She said she wanted one favor from him. He said to name it, and she said, publish your books. When she got home, she went straight into hospice and died a couple of weeks later. As you may have guessed, the main character of this story is me. The time to go it alone was over. I made a promise I would keep. It took time, but I found an agent who found me a publisher. I now have 4 books in print with more to come as time permits. Going it alone is very dangerous. It is hard to grow as a writer without constructive feedback. It may be hard, harsh, but break it down to information you can use. Going it alone also means that no one else sees your work. Trust me, there is no better feeling than when someone comes up and says they loved your book. Deep down, you wrote it to be read. It wants to be read. Polish it and find a publisher. Do your homework and surround yourself with good people. Don't wait for the horrible wake-up call I did before acting. What's the worst that can happen? You write back where you were, but you tried. And you are right, Rival. Going it alone is never, ever a good thing. I was blessed to have a support of authors that we got burned by a publisher, but we remained tight, and some days that's what kept us all going. And no writer should ever go it alone. I hope you found that support with other writers now.
Right. Yes.
Now, when, as an author, as a writer, it's at one time or another, we all get rejected. It's just, I have enough rejection letters to paper my entire house. But then I decided to take charge of my own destiny and say, forget it, I'll do it myself, which I did and never looked back. But would you agree that being rejected will do one of two things? It will either make you stronger, or it will make you, it will allow someone else to steal your dream.
Right. That's right. You hit it on the head there. And, you know, if you allow somebody else to steal your dream, only you can do that. Only you can allow somebody to steal your dream. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
It seems like somebody else is doing it, but you're allowing them to do it.
Exactly. And then you become one of those people that at their end of the life, when they said, do you have any regrets? You go, well, I want Stream to be a writer, but... And you've left out a piece of your heart, basically. And thank goodness that your mother was a strong enough woman that she saw that, and she said, don't think about it anymore, son, just do it.
Yep, absolutely.
Now, I read somewhere where your publisher went out of business.
I have 2 publishers, and the second one went out of business. So I'm still published with Solstice, which has... my first 2 books, and at the moment the second 2 books are out of print. My agent is working on getting me back with a different publisher. They went out of business on the 31st of March.
See, and with small publishers that happens all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Which people need to be aware of, that these vanity presses and small publishers, these small houses, go in and out of business like a revolving door. And if you're not careful, you lose the rights to your book. So, ladies and gentlemen, be smart. When you find out they're going out, get your books back really quick. Would that be a fair statement, Rival?
Absolutely. When you read the contract at the very start, make sure you have down there that if something were to happen, you get your rights back, because it's all about your rights. So you
that
can take them somewhere
true.
Else.
That is very true. Well, how long do you think it'll be before those second books will be back out?
I don't expect it to take very long. My agent doesn't expect it to take very long.
Very good. Now, let's talk about your books.
Sure.
Are they fantasy? Are they sci-fi? Are they paranormal? Are they a combination? You know, the genres are so mixed now. I don't think there's a straight genre anywhere out there. It used to be romance, true crime fiction, comedy, or just general fiction. And now the genres are as many as the books that we write.
I would call it high fantasy. But if you wanted, you could just call it fantasy. It's in line with things like The Lord of the Rings, that sort of a fantasy book. But it's a story about a character named Lynvin Griffinshield, and he's a general in a country called Valia, and he gets summoned home from the Goblin Wars because there's an emergency at home, and he leaves, and his father has disappeared, and he needs to take over the family business. And he finds out eventually his mother's assassinated and they're coming for him and he has to leave. And the reason that all this is happening is because his father was trying to find the red sapphire for him because he was meant to have it. And it's a source of great power. And someone else, of course, is after it as well. Now, a lot of people out there will say, well, it's just a ruby. And I purposely made it a red sapphire and not a ruby. And if you read the story, you'll understand why. But he sets off on a quest to find it with his uncle and his two absolutely annoying cousins. If you can think of the most annoying people in your life that you've ever met, that's what these two cousins are like. And so there's quite a bit of comic relief there. And so they have quite an adventure with a lot of time for him to grow, because he needs to grow into being worthy of the red sapphire. At first, he's a little immature, gets provoked into arguments very easily, and his uncle is there to point out, you have to be above such things. You have to be a bigger person than that. And it's hard, especially when he's got those two there to annoy him at every instance.
I have a visual, Rival. That's why I'm laughing, because I have a visual of these two people. And they're walking or riding down a path, and they're just egging him on, just like two little troublemakers. I'm trying to think of who it was in Lord of the Rings. It was one troublemaker and just egged everybody on. And that's why I'm laughing, because I can see, as you're talking about this story, I can see these three young people and two troublemakers knowing that they're making trouble and don't really care at this point, do they?
No. They came along because Linven guaranteed them payday at the end. But they don't care about anything else. So they're just like being flicked in the side of the head over and over and over. And it's just annoying, and you want so badly to smack the person who's doing it, but you can't. That's what it's like. I love comic relief because it's, if you don't have comic relief in your book, it's like trying to eat a pound cake and eat a whole thing of it. It's just so dense. It's just so much. It's just so thick. You can be the greatest writer in the world, but oh my gosh, it's just too much.
Well, what I want to know is, at 13, and I know the backstory is that things were kind of tough at home, but as a 13-year-old, how were you mature enough in your mind and in your soul to understand that you, A, needed comic relief, and B, to start a story of a quest like that?
Well, the quest was really easy to come up with, because I wanted something that was going to take a lot of time and have it where he had to mature, because I knew, for example, that I needed to grow up a lot, and I took it that even though he was an adult, that so did he. You know, I was the youngest of seven, and I looked at my oldest brothers, and, you know, they still needed to mature, and they were full grown. So, you know, when they're giving me wedgies and they're full grown men, I think they need to grow up a little bit.
Well, you know, they say that boys don't mature as fast as girls, that boys really aren't mature until they're sometimes 40. So who knew?
Yeah, I believe it. I believe it. But, go ahead.
I was going to say, and taking 2 years as between 13 and 15 to writing this book, and then setting it aside, when you went back to it, had your, and I'm sure it had because we all grow emotionally and mentally, but had your writer's intellect advanced so that when you went back and read it, you were almost afraid to do anything with it because it was still in the voice of a 13-year-old boy?
Absolutely. I came back to it and I was just like, oh my goodness, this needs a total rewrite. What was I doing? So I went through and I rewrote it again. I don't know how many times I rewrote this thing. And one thing my mom did say when I was older and I put it in the computer was that one thing that my father hated even to the day I published it was that for all his writing, and he had awards on the wall everywhere for his work as a writer, and that was everything from advertising to just writing articles and technical writing. She said he never wrote a book because every time he tried, he would just keep rewriting the first chapter over and over and over again. And at a certain point, you have to say, okay, let's move on.
That is very true. And is when I tutor new writers who say, well, I don't want to turn this book loose because it's not finished yet. Well, at a point, one's got to say it's finished. It will never be perfect, but it's finished, because if you don't turn it loose, it's like letting your children go when they get grown. Well, I'm not through with them yet. Well, yeah, you are. They're kind of grown now. They need to go. If you don't turn that book loose, it won't get out there for people to read. What was the point in writing it if you didn't want it out there for people to read?
Well, something that I was told years ago that really helped me with the book was that Leonardo da Vinci never believed that the Mona Lisa was finished.
That's a true statement. He did. And if he kept messing with her, she might not have wound up with that mysterious smile that has made her famous.
Right.
And now whether was by design or whether it was by mistake, that is what made that painting famous, was that smile.
Yep.
And the same can be said of writing. It's something within that book that makes people click with that book. And two, when you keep messing with something and you keep going over it and going over it, pretty soon several things happen. One, you lose the original idea for the story. Two, many, many times it becomes a total hot mess and you can't unravel it because it's already shredded. And three, you're so frustrated with it, you just want to toss it in the trash can and never pick up another manuscript again. Would that be a fair statement?
Oh, absolutely. You have to know when to just put it down and say, okay, the chapter's done, move on.
And to go from technical writing to creative writing, and people don't understand this, technical writing is as different as daylight and dark from creative writing. And creative writing is as different from daylight and dark from journalistic writing. And none of those three have anything in common except words on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take a technical writer, and this is probably what happened to your father, as a technical writer, he couldn't switch gears and put that chapter in creative form because he was so wired to write things tight and technical that he couldn't just build a scene and move on.
I would say that's accurate.
I have seen journalists try to write fiction. They can't do it. For the most part, they can't. It's not in their wheelhouse because they don't know how to. Again, you have to be tight. You only have a quarter of a column or a half a column, or if you really, really got a good story, you might get the front fold of the paper with maybe a column and a half in the middle of the paper. But you have to condense the event in most times 1,000 words or less, and still make that story stand out, and they don't know how to build a scene. And it's very difficult for them to be able to break out of that mold. And so I can understand your father's frustration that he could not walk away from what he'd done, especially getting all those awards, because to tell you the truth, Rival, I would never, ever want to do technical writing for a living. I don't have it in me.
Nope.
I admire somebody I admire somebody that can do it. So if someone wanted to get your books, they would get Quest of the Red Sapphire, and what's the second one?
Sapphire Crucible.
And where does that one take them?
Well, that's the second half of the story of Quest for the Red Sapphire. And that takes you to who ends up with the Red Sapphire. And Linven and his party have to get out of where they are and get home, which is not an easy thing. Huge fight scenes. And there's still going to be a little bit of comedy, but now even his cousins understand how serious everything has become. There's some lighthearted moments, but now it's like, what's going to happen to them? What's going to happen next? Oh my gosh. Wow. I didn't see that coming.
Ooh. I definitely.
So there's a lot of suspense, and there's a lot of times you say, okay, there's just no way. One of my favorite things to do in books is to sit there and say, okay, this time there's no way they can get out of this. There's no, oh, I didn't see that coming. Oh, wow. Huh. That makes sense.
Interesting.
So the second one, you know, if you really love action, it's got a lot of action. The first one has action, too, don't get me wrong. But there's a lot of character development that goes on in the first book.
Right. And then the second book is the, now we got to do something with what we've got.
Yep.
So what is the third book is called Mandrian Revenge?
Yes. For what happened in the second book, the enemy are antagonist in the book is named Lord Mandrian. And he's emperor of the Mandrian Empire. Well, long story short, he didn't like the way things turned out in the second book completely. Things went okay, but not as well as he would have liked. And he's mad at Linven. So he's decided to come up with a scheme to make Linven pay. And it's pretty diabolical. So he comes up with this plan, and Linven's kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. And he's got to take another trip, but this time something really, really bad happens. And I can't tell you what that is.
Oh, I don't want to know. Now, this one is out. Is this the one of the ones that's been pulled back?
Yeah, it'll be back out as soon as I have a new publisher for it.
And Repercussions Abound, that's also one that's been pulled back?
Yeah, that one, Linvin eventually gets out of the really bad situation, but this is a book where everybody loses. You know how you have the merry, happy, everybody wins book?
Yeah.
This is not it.
Uh-oh.
This is the book where the bad guys lose, the good guys lose. Pretty much everybody loses. And
everybody winds up being a hot mess.
Yeah. You sit there and you're thinking, well, maybe no. What about, it looks like maybe, no.
Oh, you're an evil person, Ravel. You were evil.
But I introduced some new.
Before you say that, one could say without a doubt that there is no happily ever after in this fourth book.
Well, what there is a new happily ever after.
Okay.
It's just with different characters.
Okay.
And, you know, just some of the old ones had to go away.
Sort of like real life.
Yep.
I like that. So now in the fifth book, are you working on a fifth book?
Yes, I'm working on that right now.
And what's that title?
This one is totally, totally different than the other four. This one is called The Thief Master of Ravensburg. And that takes one of the new characters, and he goes to, actually starts from where he leaves off from the fourth book, and he goes down to the city called Ravensburg, and he's basically a thief. He's a thief who likes to kill people, but he's a thief.
Okay then.
And he becomes Linvin's new friend. He worked for the Mandrians as an assassin, but as he puts it, he's a thief who likes to kill people, not a killer who likes to steal stuff. And so...
That's an interesting concept.
Yes. And his favorite view is through the bottom of a glass. So... He's fun to write. He's a lot of fun to write. But it's going to be just a really fun book. He decides that he wants to be the thief master in the city because the one that's there is scamming the thieves. And if you think about it, that's not a good idea.
That's true.
So he has to do something about that. And can't tell you what he does, but he leaves a lot of bodies on the way.
Well, you know, since you've whetted all of our appetites, that the listeners are going to run right out, and they can't go now because they got to finish the show first, unless they can multitask. But they're going to run right out and order the first two books, and then they're going to jump up and down until you find a publisher for the second two books, And then they're going to do you like we're all doing R.R. Martin and harass the daylights out of you until you release the fifth book, because this one is just full of all kinds of goodies.
Well, he's hilarious in the way he does things. He's just hilarious.
Well, I for one can't wait. And see, now I can't read the new book till I read the first two and then wait until you decide to get the second two out there. And then by then maybe you'll have the fifth one. Yeah, R.R. Martin's got some competition. That's for sure now.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
I appreciate that. I take great pride in my writing.
Well, and you've brought the characters to life, and you've just talking about them has made them three-dimensional. And any writer worth their salt does not have a one-dimensional character. The character has to be three-dimensional. You have to feel like you're in the story with them and going on their journey with them in order to enjoy the story. And you've done that just by our conversation tonight. I can't wait to read them.
Well, thank you.
So, there's 9 in the series, right?
Mm-hmm.
What comes after the Thief Master?
Well, I haven't titled it yet, but Numenor gets all set up. His friend, the new Thief Master, Numenor, he gets all set up as Thief Master, and then he comes up to visit Lindvin because he's discovered something really bad. One of the really bad people who got away in the fourth book is essentially a demon.
Yeah.
And the only way they could have killed him was when he was in a human state, which was in the fourth book, and they kind of can't now. But he's got a plan for world domination. They have to sort of find a way to stop it. So they know where he is, but they have to find a way to stop him between the two of them.
And the hits just keep on coming.
Yep. And he's creating an army, and it's a pretty tall order to try to stop him. But these two are going to try. And they've got a few tricks up their sleeves.
Okay, R.R. Martin Jr., let's get with the program and let's get these books done so that these people won't reach through the internet and strangle us because they want to read the books. Now, can you believe that our hour is almost up?
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
that went fast.
It goes by really, really fast. What I would like for you to do is let the folks know where you can be found and where your books can be found.
Okay. The first two books can be found on Amazon.com and on my website, which is www.rivalgates.com. You can find a link for them there. That's also where you can find my blog. And I blog on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. And let me see. I think that sums it up.
Can they find you on Facebook?
Yes, I'm on Facebook. And just do a search for Rival Gates, and you'll pull me right up. And if you want, send me a friend request, and I'll go ahead and accept it.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, you've got to do this. You've got to hook up with Rival, because you're going to read the first two books, and then you're going to be in limbo because the next two were pulled, and they're getting ready to go back out, but you won't know that if you're not friends with Rival on Facebook, and you won't know about the fifth book or the sixth book. So go and friend this wonderful, wonderful author, and I'm going to go download the first two books, and then I'm going to harass the hell out of him because I'm already friends with him to get those two books up. Now, we are in the last few minutes of the show, and before we get down to the wire, I want to thank Rival for coming on the show, and I want to bring you back, Rival, because when you get that fifth book written, we'll do a show and launch it, so keep me in the loop. And when those other two come back out, let me know and let's get you back on the show so we can launch those books so that they don't burn us in effigy or something. You know how people are. The readers are sort of fickle like that. But I appreciate so much you coming on the show. And, ladies and gentlemen, on Monday night, author Rick Powell will be on the show with us. On Wednesday night, Reagan Keeter, also known as Gabriel Burns, I think that's who he writes as. Thursday night, author Romarin Dementri, I think I'm pronouncing her name right. Friday night is Nick Carey, and Saturday night is my friend Chris Plain, who is also a radio host. And all of you know that I always end the show with this, that the world is made up of dreamers. We're all dreamers. Some of us just started sooner than others. And some of us allowed others to steal our dreams. And it's like Rival said earlier, if you allow someone to steal your dream, it's on you. If you have a child, a spouse, or even yourself, and you have this dream, you support your child, your spouse, your friend, or even yourself, even if you have to go it alone for a while. You support them and help them to achieve that dream, because you don't want to be that person that says, I shoulda, woulda, coulda, because we only go around once. Because even if we come back in another form, the dream's not the same. There may be a hole there where we feel like something's missing, but the dream is not the same. And I'm sure Rival can tell you, just like I can tell you, nothing feels better than seeing that dream fulfilled. Am I right, Rival?
Absolutely.
And knowing that we did something good. And I don't care what the dream is. If you want to be a garbage collector, be a garbage collector. It's a good dream. If you want to go to the moon, go to the moon. It's a good dream. You can be anything or do anything you want to do if you want to do it bad enough. So don't be that person. Don't allow anyone to steal your dream. And remember that Monday night, Rick Powell will be here. Tuesday night we're off, and then the rest of the week we'll be on. And if you want to achieve success and or greatness, stop asking permission. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, I would say that would be fair.
So stop asking permissions, ladies and gentlemen, and go out there and believe it and then achieve it, because you can. It's all up to you. And Rival, once again, I want to say thank you so much for spending an hour with me and talking about your book and getting to know you, because I feel like I learned a lot tonight.
Oh, it was my pleasure. I really had a lot of fun.
Well, we're going to do this again, so, and because I'm your friend on Facebook, I know where to find you.
And
don't hang up when the show goes dark because I've got some instructions for you. But ladies and gentlemen, on Monday night, this is Off the Chain. I'm your host, Yvonne Mason, and we say believe it and then achieve it. Good night. All right, what's going to happen? We're dark now, but we're in archives. When this thing goes up in archives, I will post it on Facebook and tag you in it, and then you can take this show and do anything you want to with it. Put it on your page, put it on your blog, promote yourself everywhere. And then tomorrow I will put it up on 6 different podcasts, and I will also tag you once they go live on those podcasts. I'll tag you on Facebook. Use those. Use them as a promotion tool for your work and for yourself. Because we are heard on Blog Talk Radio, on iTunes, FM.com, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Mixcloud, Podcast.com, Podomatic, and Podcast Garden, and 2 or 3 others. I forget their names. So we're heard everywhere.
Thank you. And by the way, you were really nice to me.
Well, honey, this is what I do. This is why I'm successful, because you guys come on my show and spend an hour putting up with me. So you are most welcome. You, I appreciate very, very much. Tell the grandbabies that I'm sorry I took them away from you for an hour, but I appreciate it and I thank them for it.
All right. Well, you have a great night.
You too, sweetheart. And I will get this up, and I'll get it to you as soon as it gets up.
All right.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
All right.